This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of March 11th, coming up on Jim Allen's birthday. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning, up with the birds, is my friend Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm for the birds this morning. No, I'm good. You know, this past week was one of my favorite weeks in Japan, because it's the week that baseball returns to the Kanto region. I should say professional baseball returns. Baseball's always here. I mean, I've got readers who send me videos of their kids' games pretty much all year round.
Okay. But
which I love. So, Gary, this is a shout-out to you. Thanks, and keep them coming.
All right. Well, yes, baseball back here. Although we did have snow this past week, and I can't tell you how much of an inconvenience that was for me.
Really?
On my way. Yeah, I was getting ready to go to the gym.
Me.
I can't tell. I'm going to the gym in the morning, and of course, I didn't. I was running outside much of the time last year, and I've stopped that in the winter, and I'm doing gym runs and other kinds of exercises, and I'm just going to the gym. So, you know, snow doesn't make any sound, so I didn't know it was snowing. I open the door and I walk outside, and I'm half asleep anyway. It's before six, and I lock the door behind me, and I'm walking. I'm like, why is everything white? It was ridiculous. But I slushed over to the gym, and by the time I got home, it had melted and subsided, so it wasn't snowing anymore, so it wasn't so bad. But what an inconvenience. My feet were frozen.
I'll bet. Yeah, the weather's been, you know, we had a week where we had a week of spring weather towards the end, or about 5 days of mid-spring weather towards the end of February. And we're like going, oh, man, the groundhog is telling us spring's over, winter's over.
Groundhog, he lieth. I looked up and said, no mo snow. Let's go.
Oh.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Oryx pitcher Alessandro Maestri. We look at Samurai Japan's games against Europe, check in on the end of camps and the start of preseason games, and hit some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, as John said, the Japan national team, Samurai Japan, this past week played Team Europe in games that were called different things depending on who was promoting them. Samurai Japan Series, Global Baseball Series, you know, you name it. But it was a kind of a ragtag team of European players who are connected with European countries. Some from Europe, some not, some from the Caribbean, but some old, some young, a variety of guys with who many of them are playing in indie ball in Mexico. And one guy who was a replacement on the series is playing, he's a first baseman, is playing in Japan indie ball. So it was kind of interesting. But the thing that struck me about a month ago was I saw when they announced the players roster and the coaching roster, I saw Alessandro Maestri was the pitching coach for Team Europe. And so I found him, I reconnected with him through social media, and he was gracious as always. And we're just going to, we talked on Zoom for a while, and I'm going to give you the best part of that. So take it away, Alex. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, back after a long absence, is Alessandro Maestri, formerly of the Oryx Buffaloes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jim. It was nice to see you again.
So happy to see your name on the coaches list.
It's good. Life, life is crazy.
Yeah.
You get to come back.
I know. This would be your second time back for baseball. Yeah, you were back with the Pegasus. You were in the BC League a little bit.
Yeah. After I got done with the Buffaloes, I went to South Korea.
Right.
Yep. Then I played 3 months, didn't do too well. So once I got released, I went back to play independent ball.
Mm-hmm. How was
that? And yeah, it was good. It was a time of my life just because. So once I got released in South Korea, my mm-hmm. wife was with me
mm-hmm.
and she was pregnant. So we actually had to stay an extra 10 days in South Korea because, she had to give birth to my actual daughter. Wow. So my daughter was actually born in South Korea. Yeah.
Yeah. Details.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. And so, yeah, once after, I think a week, she was born, then we actually flew to Japan to to finish the season with the Diamond Pegasus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so while I was playing, obviously I had that going on. A brand new baby. It was cool. Yeah,
what a way to go. Well, yeah, I'm really happy for you. So tell me, how did this coaching gig come about?
So well, the manager is Marco Mazzieri, which was the Italian national team manager mm-hmm. when I was a player.
Okay.
And actually, with him, the national team did really well. Mm-hmm. He was manager for 10 years, and those were the years when the national team, did really good.
Right.
So we had a very good relationship, player to coach. And then last year, I don't know if you know, but I worked for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I did not know that.
Yeah, as a pitching coach, I was with them. I was actually in their Dominican Republic Academy.
Okay.
Year long. So I was there from February to December, basically. And Marco actually, once he got news that he was going to be the manager, he called me right away. Nice. And he asked me if I was, interested in that, and obviously I was.
Why not?
That's how everything. Absolutely, man. Also because Japan is something that I have in my heart. It's a country that I have in my heart, and then obviously it's a great opportunity for me. And and third, I'm gonna go back to the stadium where I used to play. That's crazy that
right.
the games are gonna be right in that stadium. Happy happy about that.
I'll bet. Now, you're, I was looking at your career and I'm thinking, well, you got an awful lot done after it seemed you were done at the age of 22 with shoulder stiffness. You had shoulder injury or something when you were with the Cubs in AA.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up writing a book about my career.
Oh, really?
So I consider myself a huge player or
That's
there's
right.
way many, there's way more players that did really, way more than I did. My story, I think, is interesting because when you're talking about that shoulder stiffness,
mm-hmm.
Actually, when I came back from that injury, I ended up running to having the yips.
Okay.
Which it was like a very stressful time of my career.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of affected me for the rest of my career. So I always had to deal with that.
Oh.
And that's why I ended up writing a book just to share that experience. Especially here in Italy, people always think that, I was just good. And that's why, as an Italian player, I was able to accomplish many things compared to maybe other Italian players. But internally, everything wasn't that easy. I had to go through a lot of stuff as well. And, I just wanted to share that part of my career that probably nobody knew, because when you have the gips, obviously it's something that you always try to keep inside. And you try to deal with it and you try not to show other people that you have it, because it's something you might be ashamed of, which mm-hmm. you shouldn't be. But so for me, I got to a point where I was touch bottom, and that's when I got released from the Cubs. I went to play independent ball in the States, and I was really bad with the yips.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow I was able to find a way to deal with that. I also like visited a sports psychologist and he helped me out a lot. And so that's when I went to Australia and when I find, you know, an opportunity to go play independent ball in Japan. And from there is when I signed with the Oryx Buffaloes. And I was able to, you know, accomplish my dream to pitch in the big leagues. It wasn't the American big leagues, but it was the Japanese one.
Right.
So, you know, I think interesting about my career was that I really had to deal with something that is, it's not that easy, especially for a pitcher. Like, what do you do is throwing a baseball. And
right.
I wasn't able to freaking hit the catcher at some point.
Wow.
And so, I think, I mean, I'm proud of actually able to accomplish that after all that happened, you know?
What was the biggest part of that recovery for you looking back on that?
Mentally?
Mm-hmm.
I had to do a deep job in trying to like find, like in working in relaxation, because basically it's just it's anxious, like you get anxious, it's anxiety problem you get,
yeah.
And you cannot really control like your thoughts, are actually like taking control of you.
Okay.
So I had to do a lot of relaxation. I remember doing that basically every day before I'm going to bed, before every start. And you know, now that I'm looking back, like I get tired just to like do all that in order to play a game,
right?
You know, it's like I could not do it. Like I feel like, you know, I gave everything I had. But yeah, I mean, everything happened for a reason. I ended up, once I got done playing, I actually launched a brand, a baseball brand, which is called Dominate.
I saw that.
And it's related because when I started thinking about like launching this brand, my wife was like, how would you name it? Like, would you put your name on? I was like, no, like, you know, I'm nobody. Like people that know me, maybe, you know, 2-3 years more. And then who's Alessandro Maestri, you know? So what is baseball for me? Baseball, it's such a like a mental sport, such a mental game that to me dominate is being able to dominate your mind.
Okay.
And so yeah, that's how everything started. You know, my brand, and obviously right now it's still kind of local. Like we sell in Italy pretty well, and in Europe we actually, you know, spreading a little more in Europe. But yeah, so like, you know, everything that happened to me kind of took me to this now. You know, so. I don't know. I think it's just cool how everything works out. And this is my job right now. Like, this is what I'm trying to do. This is actually my shop. I mean, my shop right now, it's pretty small.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Cool. It's Sunday. It's closed. I actually got my uniforms up there.
Nice.
But yeah, so I sell baseball products. I also sell like MLB, NBA, clothing.
Okay.
Apparel, yeah, and so.
Well, quite a So you had quite a struggle that, you know, none of us had really any clue that you were going on, and you know that was 8-9 years ago, and things have changed a lot in the world. I mean, obviously, when you watch things that go on recently, of course, with the pro tennis players and the Olympic gymnast saying, hold it, you know, I've got to take care of myself. It's obviously a step forward.
Yeah,
in people, absolutely. In not feeling, people feeling ashamed of really who they are.
Right.
So I'm very happy to see that growth. And obviously you must be thinking when you see that, what are your thoughts?
No, I mean, it's completely normal. Like, and that's the thing. I remember like when I was in the States, there were the first few mental coaches walking around.
Right.
And everybody would look at them like, I would never talk to him. Like, I'm not crazy. Like, I don't want to show that part of me.
Right.
You know, while now I'm sure that all the big players do have probably like a mental support or somebody
sure.
that. can work that part with them as well. So I'm really happy that actually now it's something normal. It should be. It's just times changed. And I'm just happy that now it's something normal, like for the people that are playing now.
Yeah, we had an interview the other day. John Gibson had an interview on our podcast. And that is, he said, Deonte Heath, who also played in the BC League between his stints with the Carp and the Cebu Lions.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, he wanted to help people make the transition to Japan. And he said, people think it's a step down, but it's not. And I thought that was so astute. It's different, but it's not, it's definitely not a step down.
Absolutely not.
Now, what was your experience?
No, I was blessed. I was so happy to be part of it. I think that the things that I like the most is maybe for the type of person I am. I always try to blend in with the Japanese mm-hmm. culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to do everything they were doing, even though it's different, from the way that maybe they do it in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And so at times it was hard, and it got to some point where it was kind of stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what I remember the most from my years that I spent there is the fact that I was able to actually feel one of them.
All right.
And even the fact that sometimes a Japanese player would like take me out of dinner just without my interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Because also I was trying to learn Japanese and I wasn't bad at it. I could, get by. And that was something that makes me really proud. Like I'm really happy to have done it that way, and just not go there. Like, I'm a foreigner, I'll do things my way.
Mm-hmm.
I really respected the way they were doing things and the culture. And that's why I think, I was able to play there maybe, a little longer than somebody else.
Right.
Some other players do even. Yeah. But yeah, that's the thing that I like the most.
Now you watch the, what? I have to ask, do you follow the Japanese baseball at all anymore?
No, I mean, I know the Oryx Buffaloes got really good now.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm happy about that. I still talk to one of my interpreters every once in a while. I'm happy they're living that they're experienced that right now. They deserve it.
Yeah, so. it was a tough time when you were there. That team was, I'm going to say it, that the team, I loved a lot of the players and some of the coaches, but the front office was an absolute mess.
So they changed a lot of people in the front office?
Yeah, they kicked them out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they got rid
and
of
that's what.
That was the big thing. They kicked out these guys who were basically there trying to make money off the team.
And so now they're winning, huh?
And now they, the good talent, the good scouting they had and some of the player development, and they got a really good manager, and it's like night and day. And
yeah.
some of the former players, like, the catcher, Ito, do you remember
him?
Hikaru Ito?
Yeah.
He's with Yokohama now. I talked to him and he said, man, I'm so jealous. I wanted to be on that Oryx Buffaloes and not the team I was on. But I'm he said the same. He's happy for his teammates. He said it's night and day from when he played there. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask a couple. Now, in March, the Europe, this is a new thing. Japan, of course, plays these every year. The Japan national team typically plays a March and a November series. And this year it's against a team of European stars. And what does that mean for the guys to come and get to play the Japanese national team in Japan?
I did talk to them. Like, we basically, so far, we just talk on the phone. Mm-hmm. That's all we did so far. We're mm-hmm. going to get together actually once we get there, mm-hmm. March 2nd. But players are so excited. Each one of them, once I start texting them, They all got back to me, you know, telling me they were going to be proud of representing this team, and mm-hmm. they're all excited, obviously. Japanese national team is definitely, you know, we all know it's one of the best in the world, and trust me that they're all curious to know if they're going to be a lot of fans in the stands. That's what they want.
Mm.
And I'm sure, and I'm pretty positive it's going to be, it's going to be a lot of people, because usually fans respond to the national team they support. So they're all excited. And, I'm happy for them that they're going to be able to experience this.
Now put yourself in their shoes and maybe step back and look at baseball in Europe and think about where you were, 15 years ago and where it is now. What do you see?
To be honest with you, Italy as a nation is doing worse. Mm-hmm. I feel like when Mazzieri, the manager that is going to manage this team, was the manager back then, things were different. And the national team was doing really, really good things. Right. And right now, unfortunately, it's not so good. The level kind of dropped down.
Okay.
The league is not that good anymore. There are some countries that are doing a better job, which is Czech Republic and Germany. Sure. They actually invested in a better way than we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so they deserve like to have few players in this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest obviously is Netherlands, which is always sure. pretty good. They do a good job. And then we have Spain, that is always able to, to get their hands on players with double passport. Mm-hmm. Most of them are Latin. And mm-hmm. so, they got good talent because of that. I don't feel like Europe as a whole group got better
mm-hmm.
since when I was a player.
But
hopefully, things are going to change. I don't know.
WBC is a little different because you get all the, the Fletcher brothers there. And
yeah.
It's their MLB, a lot of MLB guys, and MLB runs that show. It's not Italy running the show, obviously.
No, it's not. But again, we did have a few WBC where actually half of the team
sure.
was represented by born and raised Italian players.
Sure.
Maybe they weren't they weren't the guys that were actually playing every day, but we had a pretty good group.
Mm.
While the last one, I think it was just a couple of actually Italian born, and that's something that shows you that, we probably, we didn't do a good job in the last few years.
Mm. Although I was surprised to hear that the Fletchers both spoke Italian growing up because their mom's Italian. So,
yeah.
Okay. Now, if you're in these guys' shoes and you're playing baseball, let me put it that way. If you were them, if you're still looking to, to be a better baseball player, what could you hope to learn by being part of this team and going to Japan?
I mean, it's just another experience that you put in your bag, and mm-hmm. some of them maybe are even hoping for exposure, and
sure.
everybody wants to play at that level.
Sure.
And who has a little more talent is definitely hoping to get seen from maybe scouts or teams. So I'm sure they're going to be, pretty focused on trying to get what they want. And, and I hope for them to, some of them at least, to do that, actually get some exposure and interest by any of the teams there, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously. I mean, we could say the same about the Japan team. What do they have to gain by playing Europe? But they have to gain just by bringing the whole team together. These guys all learn from talking to each other, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that much who they play. But obviously, if you look back to the last WBC, there was so much respect for the other teams from the Japan players.
that struck me. And even in the U.S., you know, in the U.S. rounds, the teams filled with major leaguers against teams that didn't have a lot of talent. Now, there was so much respect. I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I mean, from Japanese people, I don't expect anything else, you know, when we talk about respect, they're definitely right. They're like role model for that. So I know like they're so proud of their country that they could even play like a little league team from I don't even know where, but they're gonna like put everything in, you know, in that game. Like they don't play just to play. They do play for a reason every time. So
yeah, the Japan Czech Republic game is still kind of famous here.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy striking out Shohei Ohtani on.
Yeah.
Quite amazing.
Yeah, that was definitely the highlight of his career, I'm sure. And I'm sure Ohtani has other things in his mind, but.
I don't think he's forgotten. All right. Okay. Well, I doubt I'm going to be able to get to Osaka, but if I am, I will definitely look you up. Thank you so much and best wishes and have a safe trip.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. I didn't get to go to Osaka, so unfortunately, but it was a blast. And you got anything you'd like to say about it?
Yeah, well, what a fantastic journey this chat was. I mean, thanks to you and a special shout out to Alessandro. He was fantastic. It starts off kind of slow, I guess, in the first minute because you guys were just reconnecting. But the subject matter and the storylines were just all memorable. I'm going to try to cover it all here because I know the chat was kind of long. But from his pregnant wife causing a delay and him returning to Japan, then he becomes, I'm jumping around, of course, but he's ends up coaching the Euro team as the pitching coach. Then his Italian baseball team, the team, I'm sure, you know, Mike Piazza, I remember, was the manager of that team last time we saw that team in the WBC, and that their play has fallen off. And now then you got Alex writing a book and him having the yips and the mental stress and him launching a brand and owning a shop and talking about his Oryx days and coaching against the Samurai team. And Alex, I wanted to correct you. You said Alex, the Samurai were one of the best teams in the world. And I would argue they are the best in the world, seeing as Ohtani, that Ohtani Mike Trout showdown is an indelible image burned into the memories of fans worldwide. So, and they won again. So I would say the best. And then having him talk about the European players seeing these games is sort of like tryouts. I tried to cover everything that Alex covered in his chat because
that's good.
You're going to ask me what stood out, and I'm going to say all of it did because you talk about guys having the yips, and I think I've spoken about this a little bit on JBW, but I think some of the things I always talk about are the nicks that players get, and we don't know who's hurting where. Maybe they fouled a ball off a foot, or you know, they had a play at a base in which they crashed into the opposing player and got dinged up somehow. But another thing, another aspect is those guys who take home the 0-for-4s with a couple of double plays and an error, and how that mental recovery of an athlete is just as important as the physical recovery. And there's no ice tub. There's no ice tub for a mental recovery. And so, you know, you have to learn how to deal with it as players. And so when Alessandro is talking about having basically a sports psychologist on the team, and that more teams are employing these kinds of guys for this mental recovery that the players, at least the teams are noticing or aware or trying to facilitate better mental recovery and how to deal with it and how to cope and all these things. I thought that was a huge thing that kind of, I think it gets overlooked. And I tried to mention that last year, DNA for the first time, the Bay Stars had one of those mental recovery coaches or a sports psychologist on the staff. And I saw him talking to Tyler Austin a lot. And I remember talking to Tyler last year, and hopefully we can get Tyler Austin on the show again. I think we had him on last year.
We did.
Yeah. Yeah. So we can get him on again and maybe talk about that aspect, because the coach was speaking English and did speak English to Tyler. So, and these things are so important. And, you know, pitchers who get the yips and can't throw the ball to the catcher, that's a dangerous prospect for guys who are batting. It's bad for the team, obviously, the mm-hmm. team for whom he plays, but it's also bad for the players trying to stand in there and take pitches from a guy who maybe could hit them in the head. So it's just, you know, it was all a long, wonderful journey. I enjoyed your questions. I enjoyed his answers and just hearing how he reflected on NPB and the entire talk, because you and I were talking before and I said, man, this thing's more than 20 minutes. What are you going to do? And you said, well, we can cut out half of it. And I start listening and I'm like, why would anyone want to cut anything out of this interview? I would split it in two and have a section one and a segment two, but I wouldn't throw anything away. So it was really, really fun. Thank you so much, Alessandro. And hopefully I'll get to see you at some point. Maybe we can get some of your goods going here in Japan.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Very kind. I guess the only thing I want to add is stuff we didn't talk about. And that is, you know, his trip, as you said, he got signed, just a little background. He was signed by the Cubs after the 2006 World Baseball Classic, because Italy's pitching coach worked for the Cubs in his mm-hmm. day job. And then he had a shoulder soreness. I call it stiffness, but it was reported as soreness. It went, like, right after he got promoted to Double A, and then he sort of rode the elevator back down, ended up in indie ball with the Lincoln, Nebraska Salt Dogs.
Salt Dogs as opposed to the Sugar Dogs.
Yes, that was, I'm sure that was their conundrum. With the
they hang out with Sugar Bear, so yeah.
Okay, could have been. Maybe it was to combat the sugar epidemic. I don't know. Played for the Brisbane Bandits and very briefly in the Chicago Island League. I think he was playing for the Kochi Fighting Dogs. So it might have been that, or it might have been the Olive Gainers, one of those Chicago Island teams, but not long. Oryx plucked him out of there right early in the season,
mm-hmm.
in the 2012 season. And he played for them for a few years, had a very short stint with the Hanwha Eagles. That is memorable, obviously, for the reasons we talked about a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that whole thing, that was one of the best. I've heard a few pregnancy stories related to NPB, but that was one of the more interesting ones I've heard. You know, it's like it's
NPB or Japan, like, right?
Yeah, or Japan, with players from NPB usually, and about their wives' pregnancies related to their, you know, sort of messing up their travel schedules. It sounded to me like he was, you know, he was experiencing life on the Oregon Trail. Yeah, my wife was pregnant, you know, and we just got over it.
Right. Yeah. Had to wait.
I know. As I said, details. Guma Diamond Pegasus, Veracruz in Mexico, Sydney Blue Sox. And then he finished his career switching between the Italian League for San Marino and the Sydney Blue Sox in the Australian Winter League. Well, mm-hmm. the misnamed Australian Winter League because they play in the summer.
It's winter everywhere else where they play baseball,
it's,
right?
Yeah. It's winter up here where we're freezing
our gym body parts off. Yes.
Exactly. I think then that was quite fun. And I think it you know, I my favorite comment in the whole one was, of course, I mentioned the Deontay Heath bit, and you know, his saying, I realized my dream of pitching in the major leagues, it just wasn't in the United States.
Right. All right, so we had the podcast going. I just don't remember us interviewing.
Oh, we had him at least once.
We had him at least once. Okay, all right. So I'll have to go back and look that up and go back and listen to it, because
yeah, 4 years he pitched in for the Buffaloes.
Yeah, but we didn't get to see a lot of Buffaloes, and we really weren't covering the Buffaloes that heavily. I remember because they weren't very, as you said, they weren't very good at the time.
It was a fun time. I mean, they had, you know, it was towards they had some guys who were great. I know Stefan Romero was with them at the end of that stretch, and you know, we'd see him up at Cebu Dome. Hear a lot. Stefan's pretty active on twitter.com,
right?
So
yeah, well, again, fantastic journey. I really enjoyed the chat, and wish we would have seen a little bit better from the European team against Samurai Japan, but let's make a seamless transition and talk about those games. So as Alessandro stated, it seemed like a lot of these guys are saying, hey, look, I could, if you need a guy like me, I could certainly perform in Japan. And that was the, seemed like the mentality that some of the guys had, not every player, and I'm sure that's not the case for everybody, but there were two games. They were on March 6th and 7th at Osaka Dome. The Japanese team won both games. and unfortunately, the European stars didn't score in the 18 innings that they had to bat. Mm. And they lost 27 up, 27 down in game two, a perfect combined perfect game for Samurai Japan. But let's go through the games. It looked like a lot to me like the Hirokazu Ibata-led Samurai just wanted to get some of these young guys some exposure on the international stage in this kind of environment. And so there were, again, we talked about the roster before, their collection of college players, young stars, and then a couple guys, three guys who had played in the WBC last year. But again, I don't think it was so much about the competition, just the exposure. So game one, the young stars come up and they win 5-0. And the virtual unknowns, such as Misho Nishikawa, a college player, just stood out, upped his draft stock so much. he had a couple hits, made a couple plays in the outfield. And Samurai did what they expected, again, blanking the European team on Wednesday. That was 5-0. And in the first inning, Chusei Mannami, it was so funny. I'm thinking, okay, Mannami is a guy who doesn't have much exposure here on this kind of stage in this kind of atmosphere. And you see him chasing pitches and striking out, and probably, I don't know that a ball was in the strike zone. But then there's a player, Kotaro Kurebayashi of the Oryx Buffaloes, and he has such a quality at bat. And he's younger than Mannami. He has such a quality at bat and finishes it off with an RBI hit to center. I guess it was right center.
Mm-hmm.
Just a stark, you know, difference between a guy who plays on a team that has won a league championship 2-3 in a row, and a guy who has not played in that kind of atmosphere. Just the quality of at bats was just different. And Mannami, I think, got better, and he had a really good defensive play. I guess it was called out. It was called back or overturned upon review. He had a play. He basically threw a runner out at second, but I blame Genda for that, because Sosuke Genda, he probably could have set up a tad closer to the bag. And when he took the throw, he would have gotten the runner, but he was a little farther away than he wanted to be and didn't get the runner. But anyway, a fun game. What were your takeaways from game one?
Well, that's a good thing, because I was thinking the same thing. But, you know, on the other hand, number one is, when you're an infielder, they tell you two things. Hold your glove where you're going to make the tag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be where you want to make the tag instead of going chasing the ball.
Yes, the ball will come to you. Yes.
Yeah, because if he had waited for the ball, he would have not needed that. But on the other hand, you also have to catch the ball. So I think that's the reflex, and it's hard even for the best players. It's hard to wait for it when, you know, there's an image when it looks like the runner and the runner's leg and the ball are going to get there at the same time. It's hard, but yes, he could have made the tag had he held the glove closer to the baseline.
Well, we know Genda's a slight guy as well, and he was in imminent danger had he gotten in the running path. So I think that's another thing. So you have to catch the ball. So your focus is definitely on the ball.
Sure.
but you're aware of the runner, and I would say everybody running on the bases is bigger physically than Genda, has a bigger body mass index than little Genda. So I think he's trying to, some of his self-preservation, considering he had a broken finger, was it, in the WBC?
Correct.
And don't want to get involved in getting injured this close to the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it was like the first anniversary of that, practically.
Right. So I think that it all plays a role. I think he's just being on the safe side, playing it safe. So, yes.
So, yeah. So that was that. And of course, the point was, to me, was less Genda's failure to record the out than the throw from Chusei Manami, which is we're all used to seeing. So,
yes,
but it's,
yeah.
but we never tire of more.
Never tired of more. Love that kid.
So there was that. And the first game, was really the star of the first game was Misho Nishikawa, one of the four college players. So just talking about a guy, and as you said, raising his stock for the draft, I don't really watch college baseball a lot. Last year I watched
Deanna.
See...
Where are you?
Yeah, I know. Well, she was
Deanna
in
Rubin.
She was in Chiba yesterday, but I watched Kota Yazawa 2 years ago because
the Fighters two-way player. Yes,
the Fighters two-way player because Hideki Kuriyama, the Japan manager, wanted him to play in the March. Internationals that were canceled in 2022 against Taiwan. So I had my eye on him, but I don't watch college ball. But I'll tell you, the inclusion of the four college players, one Rui Muneyama, whose season may be over because he broke a bone in his shoulder. And he's supposedly a first round draft choice. He's a shortstop. So we'll see how these guys go. But for me, that was really the thing that I enjoyed most about the series as a whole. The first game was, it was kind of forgettable for the Europe team. And the second game was less so.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, when you don't score, that kind of says a lot. But I don't think that – I thought they pitched a lot better than I expected because I kind of got the idea that Japan was going to take advantage of that team, especially with Munetaka – Murakami on the team. I thought, we would see a little bit more fireworks, but we didn't. So that was, I thought they pitched well. They made it. And in fact, they really pitched well in game two, which is just a 2-0 perfect ending to the series.
200 runs.
And runs, I guess the first run scored on two balls that were hit that went off gloves.
Yep.
You know, one that couldn't be caught in right field and then another that should have been fielded at shortstop, but off the glove, and it was a rocket. So,
was the second run, and the first run scored because the runner reached on a ball that the third baseman should have had. So,
yeah. So, again, six pitchers in game two on Thursday combined on a perfecto, and then again, Misho Nishikawa, this college player, had a fine running catch in the seventh inning, and we had college hurlers Yumeto Kanemaru, who just started a lefty, who started, went two innings, and he was awesome. And then Yuto Nakamura also looked great. So, but I thought the high pressure spot was after these young kids went out and threw so well that they went with the older pitchers and the more experienced guys to close it out, including Atsuki Taniichi of the Lotte Marines, who had to pitch the final two innings. And I thought that was high pressure for him, although he didn't look like it, but it's a close game. You get a walk here and a long ball and the score's tied. And I don't think were they going to play extra innings?
No.
So you don't want to blow it that way, but you also have this perfecto thing going, which I don't think many people were really thinking about that seriously. But
well, I think the pitchers is sure as
if you're a pitcher, you are.
And Nishikawa saved that. That was his catch saved the perfect game.
The running catch in the seventh.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. He made, that was good fun. And of course the game came, Europe came within about a foot on the first swing of the ninth inning of losing the no-hitter. the ball that was hit into the corner that was just foul.
Oh, yes. And yeah.
So
perfect game, not a no-hitter.
No, right. Well, at not that just point, a no-hitter. Well, yes, it was still there. But anyway, so and then Tanich came out and he brought out his fork ball and he showed that to, you know, he wanted to, you know, he's got a fork ball and he wanted to show it off to the visitors to Japan, you know, a little little hospitality.
Hospitality.
Yeah, with three straight strikeouts. It was good. I mean, I'm really eager to talk to Tanichi because he was the Marines' other strikeout guy last year. So after Roki Sasaki, but no, it was a good series. And I think the comment that I would make and connect back with Alessandro Maestri was the pitching plan for Team Europe was quite interesting. In the second game, it was basically let's go slow, slower, and slowest, and move the ball around. You know, they took a page out of the Czech Republic's WBC playbook. The Czech Republic WBC manager was one of the coaching staff, and they really confounded the Japanese hitters with movement and change-ups and change-ups that were slower than the change-ups. And good command and good control, and they really befuddled them. And that they borrowed one out of the Samurai Japan WBC playbook by showing them a bunch of different pitchers so they could never get used to the guy who was on the mound.
Right, you never see him twice in the same place.
So it was surprisingly good fun.
Yeah, and like I said, Atsuki Tanichi probably had the most the highest leverage situation, especially when he went out for the ninth inning. So, but fun to watch the games. They were entertaining and close enough. I the 5-0 game in game one was probably, like you said, uneventful. But I really enjoyed the. I don't mind a good well pitched game, and I think it was well pitched on both sides. And Alessandro's guys really showed well, I think so. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about camps / preseason games. Now, camps basically ended while we were out. Let's put it that way. We had an extended vacation here, but that's fine. And we have seen preseason games start, and I've been trying to watch some of them, but they start so early. 1 o'clock starts interfering with my NBA ice hockey and Major League Baseball watching, but I'm still complaining. I'm in a battle with MLB because I'm not able to watch the MLB games on my devices, on my phone and on my iPad. It says no video available for this game, and I've been battling with them for a week now, and I actually made a phone call and had talked to them. And they didn't call me back. And they said, okay, we'll fix the problem and and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. That was yesterday. So it's been more than 24 hours. Anyway, I've been finding it a real challenge through the Shohei Ohtani media frenzy with a side of Yoshinobu Yamamoto and others to get really meaty MPB news because it's all about him. You know, did he wake up this morning? Did he brush his hair? Is a hair out of place? Did he pass gas somewhere? I mean, all the news about Ohtani is ridiculous. We need our MPB news. And they've been showing highlights on the news a little bit. And I record news, you know, programs every night. But it's just MPB has been like a side dish or even a condiment. I mean, it's really not being covered that much in the news. It's all about the big leagues and Ohtani and the Dodgers. And one of my neighbors came downstairs yesterday and was proud to show off that she had bought a Dodgers T-shirt and she was wearing it. So it's a frenzy. It's not just the media here. It's among the members of the general public as well. But anyway, from what I've noticed, the Fighters have had a really strong February March here. They're winning games. They're looking like they're operating like a regular team. So I'm looking forward to seeing that play out in the regular season. I'm not. I my consistent stance on preseason or / fake baseball is that there are simply too many speeds, being played by various players, too many agendas, not everybody on the same page, if not having competing agendas. So the results are just what the results are, just like you talked about things being random. But what have you seen?
Pretty much the same. I find, you know, if there's a player in camp that everyone's focused on, it's a lot of fun. For a few days, some of the young Tigers hitters were kind of fun. You know, there was a lot of talk about a slew of Tigers hitters who were really jacking the ball out of the park in camp. And, you know, and the work I've seen, you know, people commenting on the work that Taro Akisato did at the Driveline Baseball in the States to steady his swing, because it's a heck of a swing. But he's just been so, his body has been so in and out and over and around and with the motion. So this guy can be terrifying. So I think that was interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, one thing about him is my impression for him coming into this season was that the reason writers and the media chose Shohei Murakami for MVP was because guys like Sato didn't step up and have the kind of season that was MVP worthy. And that his mission this year is, whether they win or not, he wants to be an MVP caliber player.
Okay.
So that doesn't happen again. Because, I mean, if I were on the team and they picked Shohei Murakami, I would be upset.
Well, of course, you know, my take on that was that Koji Chikamoto and Yusuke Oyama were both better candidates.
Sure, but they didn't have sexy numbers, so they don't stand out.
They did not, but
they had great numbers. Yeah,
they did, and it, as I said before, I don't think it was the craziest. I thought it was it was not the dumbest.
Oh yes.
It was not the dumbest outcome I've seen, because we've seen some ones that would make me scratch what's left of the hair off my head.
Well, I was very close to the bathroom when I found out that decision, and I somehow kept it in. But I would say this: if I were on the team, I would take it as a personal affront, and I think that's what Sato is doing. Is that, look, you know, the reason these people had to search out and force Murakami to be the MVP was because I didn't have the kind of season I think I'm capable of having, and I can be better. And well, so I think that's basically, I mean, if I were a player, if I were an athlete, that's how I would take it. You know, they picked this guy because I didn't do enough. So I'm going to do,
well, he
I'm
didn't gonna do enough. He didn't do enough to be the third.
Well, know, enough to be MVP. Yes.
He didn't do enough to be the third best player on the team. So I'm not certain if that's essentially the thing. But
sure,
yeah,
but whatever motivates you, I think that'll be some motivation.
Yeah, agreed. Whatever. So I thought that was fun. And that's been fun to watch. The other, I guess the other news, you know, there's dribs and drabs and droplets of news coming, but I find most of it to be. Exactly. Exactly. It's like, get this, you know, condense this stuff, make it edible, because every day it's about some guy you haven't, you know, I haven't heard of, because I don't input the rosters by hand anymore. I download them.
Mm.
You know, it's a developmental player in, you know, taken in the fifth round, first year player showing I can play by getting an RBI single in the sixth inning of a game, you know, practice game against the Hanwha Eagles.
Yeah.
I'm going, and that's the news is filled with this stuff. And it's like, you know, you need something to sift through all this stuff. You know, I need a program that says, get rid of the garbage. And, yes. And I don't mean to belittle these people's efforts, because it's their lives and the writers for writing about them, good for them. But yeah, in the big picture, it's really hard to see anything of value. The takeaway I've had was that Tai Seota, the Giants closer, has been plagued by leg issues all spring.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be something that, you know, he went back the first couple of days of camp, went back to Japan, went back to Tokyo, and then he went back to Miyazaki, and then he was on a special training menu so as not to aggravate anything. And he kind of hasn't come back to where he's playing. So that is of interest to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few stories like that of guys. Yoshinobu Okugawa, the Swallows, is another one of those where, geez, he's back and he's back and then now he's not back. And it's sort of like, you know, it's we were talking about this the other day with our former colleague Rich Freeman about the guy who broke his arm. And the team is calling it lack of upper body conditioning.
Hashtag height.
The dreaded the pandemic of conditioning problems. So you just don't know what's going on. I think that's symptomatic of a larger issue that NPB is having. And of course, that was rugby we were talking about. But anyway, that's been my take. Is lots of little news, nothing earth shattering.
It's hard to evaluate when, again, the news is focused so much on the Dodgers and what they're doing, and they show snippets of MPB
right
highlights. And yeah, it's like you said, some guy in the sixth inning with a bloop single off the Korean pitcher.
Right. I mean,
practice game.
The thing is, I mean, although John and I read Japanese and John's verbal skills spoken language skills are vastly superior to mine. I might be able to be a little bit of a better reader. But even so, we really depend on the daily condensation, you know, concentration of this is the story. To allow us to sift through all this stuff, we'll see something and people will say something. But if it's not prominent, if there's not a headline on the TV news or on the, you know, in the digest of all the stories on the web, you know, there's stories about 12 different players in a day. Mm-hmm. Whose names we're not familiar with and backstories. It's really hard for us to keep up, and it's been. And that is because normally they're searching through these stories for threads in a normal year. And this year, it's like, don't waste your time with that, because we're going to spend five of our 6 minutes of baseball news on Shohei Ohtani.
Yes. Or other big leaguers. Well, I can tell you this. I didn't know last year. I probably could have been watching more. But if you have Amazon Prime, you get some of the J Sky Sports thing channels, not all of them, but a couple of them. And so I've been able to watch some of the preseason games at work, even though they took away one of the TVs that has the cable. So I can watch some J Sky Sports. That has been good because I can listen in, and just listening to a game, you get so much information about the players. So that has really helped. Mm. But yeah, the news not helping us out very much at all. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, we have Ian in Texas who sent us a voicemail. And Ian sounded really great. Let's take a listen.
Hello from Texas, John and Jim. Just had a couple of questions for y'all. The first one is in regards to the so-called Rice incident with the Chunichi Dragons. Do you think the story was a bit overblown by the media, or that it was actually a good attempt by the team staff to try to keep tabs on the players' diets? And the second question is for Jim. Jim, if you were able to run NPB on your own the way you wanted to, what would you do to make the league and also the teams as individual groups more profitable? And if you believe that the players could use better rights in terms of their labor rights, what would you do to improve the situation for players if you think that was something that would need to be done? Look forward to the podcast and the rest of the season. Go Tigers.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. I mean, does everyone have a better voice than I do? What are you doing, Ian?
I don't.
Yes, you do. What are you talking about?
Everyone I'm borderline does. Wayne Grassick here, dude.
I don't think so. All right. Well, I got shut out of the second question. Yeah, I got shut out. So you handle that one.
Well, yeah, good question. A great question. Of course, the last commissioner who tried to make Japanese baseball better was the victim of a John Le Carre level spy takedown when his subordinates changed the ball surreptitiously and didn't tell anybody. And then everybody said, well, let's blame the commissioner for the cover up and let's promote the guy who changed the ball to be running the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of predictable. It's really hard to change things. And what he did, what Yuzo Kato did were to draw that ire was to keep a ball that people didn't like because it was his decision. He was going to keep it for 3 years and the third year was too much for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The teams all wanted a more lively ball. And he was probably mistaken in his approach, but not in the idea of having a single ball, which was one of the greatest accomplishments by an NPB commissioner in history.
Mm-hmm.
But his other one, to have a third party arbitrator help with player arbitration issues, was pretty damning for him. They wanted to get his butt out of that chair as soon as that happened, because
would you do though? Yeah,
what would I do? Well, we were talking about this, and the point is there's very little a commissioner can actually do in Japan because he can't rewrite the charter to make it a better business. But what he could do is encourage studies and research and, you know, talking with people, now we have had some improvement. I think one of the big improvements is working with amateur baseball to get former professionals credentialed so that they can teach in high schools and junior high schools in Japan, where mm-hmm. they were formerly persona non grata. Long story there, I'll skip, but that was a big thing. Yeah, so go into research, present these teams with ideas. Because the problem is that the real stumbling block there, Ian, is that the teams are happy the way things are. They lose money and they're happy because they're making a ton of, they believe the advertising value, they get a double win. It's a win-win. We lose money, but it's a tax write-off. And in exchange for losing millions of dollars every year, we get 10 times that amount of money in advertising benefit. So that's the fundamental problem. So they need to talk about how they could do things better in terms of joint marketing, which is forbidden in the Central League, and joint marketing, selling broadcast rights overseas, which is something they can't do. All kinds of things they could do to make this a bigger product, but they're not. Now, your little teaser there, working with for labor rights. Yes, they could definitely work with the union to think of ways they can do things, but that's a hard sell in Japan, where unions are pretty much looked upon by management as, you know, the cockroaches that come with every old building you buy.
Or the rats.
Or the rats. Right, exactly. And so they're there and we accept that they're there, but we don't want to deal with them.
Okay.
Except to show that we're the ones who do make the decisions around here and not the pests.
Sure. Well, Ian, I know you shut me out of the question, but I did have an opinion that I just came up with as Jim and I spoke about this actually before we went on mic. But I would, if I were the commissioner, I would go to the TV people, I would go to the teams, I would go to everyone who has broadcast rights and say, you know, MLB has an MLB app and people overseas can watch games. They can watch our games. We don't need to have them all in English. We don't need to have them all broadcast live, but we do need to have them available and people will purchase them. So let's get all these teams together, come up with one app instead of, you know, this is for Pacific League, this is for Central League, this is for this, this one is used for this particular team. Let's come up with one thing and sell that. And we can, I mean, we have an international product here. let's market it internationally and maybe have, I mean, certainly you and I can go on and be color commentary, do color commentary or something, but, you know, maybe have one game a week or something in English, but make an effort to sell to the international market because it does exist. And I don't know that it will make big money, but because Japan is winning these WBC tournaments, people want to see what the players are doing on a regular basis. So there's a market out there. So that's what I would do. Now, as for the dragons and their draconian dietary demands instilled by the lost skipper, I didn't know about this situation last year. I think if you looked at the team and the way it was operating and playing on a daily basis, just not able to score at all, and getting hits and getting walks and getting runners on in scoring position and creating chances is just not coming through. I think it's because Kazuyoshi Tatsunami just seems like he's lost at sea. He's not lost in the sense that no one can find him because we know where he is. It's just that no one wants to find him.
Hashtag
just high heat. Stay lost out there. I think, I like I said, I didn't know about this thing, but I did a little bit of research on the internet. I read some stories. I found a couple of YouTube stories that explained the situation. And apparently in August last season, Seiya Hosokawa, literally the only good thing about the Dragons offense last season, had a down period. And Tatsunami looked at him one day and said, you know, you look like you're a little bit overweight and your legs aren't moving the way they used to. I think you're eating too much, is how one YouTuber explained it. And so the manager then ordered that the dining hall stop serving white rice to the players. Now, I didn't say whether they started eating brown rice or that I think Jim, before we were recording, he said they had the rice cookers removed from the dining hall, but it just said white rice. So I don't know if that was a, you know, you could have brown rice or some of the other mixtures of rice that they have. But of course, mutiny ensued, and apparently closer Rydell Martinez and other players, just they were against this draconian dietary demand, and they started to rebel. And then Tatsunami said, well, your pitchers are doing well. Well, we'll only allow the pitcher to have white rice. And so he wasn't even treating the team evenly. He wasn't managing the games well, and now he's mismanaging the players. So it's just a look at why the Dragons looked so woeful last year in terms of trying to score runs. And, you know, everybody looked lost. And I think they're going to stick with the same theme this season. I don't think anything's really going to change that much. But look, I've had this. I mean, I've studied a little bit about leadership, and I'll tell you what I've observed about it. Leadership is not telling people what to do. It's getting people to do things without having to tell them. In that sense that you've taught them, you've instilled a baseline of what's right, what's wrong, how to operate. Because if you're the boss, they're going to listen to you if you tell them to do something. You want them to act and be able to react to situations without you having to deal with it all the time. So I think in this sense, Tatsunami, and look, we've seen the obvious missteps in his game strategies. And you know, what I harp on is the lack of imprinting onto the players the wisdom and savvy that he is supposed to have and that we saw him demonstrate as a player. And they don't do that in their play. And so I believe this was a thing, and I believe it contributed to their poor results. And I don't think it was a blip on the radar. He started off talking about hair color, and you don't want players who color their hair. And then he basically had Yota Kyoda, he basically booted him off the team because, and the reason he took him out of a game at Yokohama was because he said he didn't have the right kind of, you know, facial expression. He didn't seem like he was trying to compete. His facial expression didn't look like he was trying to compete. And I'm like, what is that? You know, the guy made obviously he had some issues with him before. That's not that might have been the straw.
Yeah, that's like the bank. But that's like your wife telling you, you know, I want a divorce because you misplay. You put the garbage out on the wrong day.
So this is the thing. So again, leadership. I'm not sure leadership is his best asset, and that's what I came away with the whole Tatsunami thing. So rice you know, for the whole team. Yeah, you digging around in the, you know, they say, what is it? The fastest way to a man's heart is through his stomach. For wives who are prospective wives looking for a husband. And so I guess the worst way is through a man's stomach. It's the quickest way to be hated. Don't mess with his food. So yeah, you mess with his food, this is what you get. No runs.
Yeah. So in answer to Ian, I think it was, I think it was an honest effort by Tatsunami to control the play, you know, to improve the players' eating habits. But, you know, it used to be before the understanding of the world, that the world was round, you know, an effort to improve the safety of ships was not to have them sail off the edge of the world.
Hashtag high heat.
So there's a knowledge issue here. And it's not like, and there's very little knowledge. I mean, you know, we're awash in a sea of misinformation and best guesses and best practices and hunches and conspiracy theories these days, it seems. There's very few things that we can, that are objectively provable. 1 + 1 = 2. And so on, that we can actually say, if you do this, this results. And I had the good fortune to talk to Masato Yoshi on Wednesday. We don't have a lot of access. We don't have the access to managers. The limited access to managers we used to have. And it was just an accident that it was raining, and he was sitting in the dugout wall looking at the rain.
Our theme this week, randomness. Yes.
Yes. Randomness. And he talked about, and I got a story coming out this week for the day job. And he talked about his experience in higher education and how you can know that if you do this, if the research is there and the base of knowledge is there, maybe not the final edition of the knowledge, you can know that if you do this, something, this other thing will result, and you can know it without actually seeing it with your own eyes. And then we have Tatsunami, who's sort of the antichrist of knowledge. I mean, he knows stuff about baseball that would fill an about hitting and playing baseball that would fill an encyclopedia, but it's not organized in a way that is useful for him to extract and to make policy about. And the other thing I would say is that there's a huge difference between knowing about baseball and being a great baseball player and being a manager, being a leader, as you said, and being a manager. I mean, Shinji Sasaoka with Hiroshima Carp is another terrific example. You know, really, you know, good guy and an extremely knowledgeable baseball guy, but just not somebody who's good at managing people. You know, I'm not a manager, so the idea that I would be commissioner, I find quite amusing.
Well, I'll take the job anytime they come at me with it. I'm there. I'm ready to go.
And go all Tigers, right. I suppose. Thank you. Thank you, Ian.
Yes, another Tigers fan. Thank you so much, Ian. Sounding really good on that question. Anyone else who has a question like Ian did, just use your phone, record a voicemail, and ship it on over to yakyujohn@gmail.com, where you can do it the old-fashioned way. Just pound out an email to us. We'll take them that way. Hit us up on twitter.com @JBWPodcast with the hashtag #HighHeat. Or go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. Now, a news update. Jim will be going to Seoul to cover the Dodgers and their opening series with the Padres. So that's awesome. But in between, or before and after his trip, we will record the Central League prediction special and then the Pacific League prediction special. And so we will be weekly from here on out to the end of the season. In theory, we might skip one in the summer like we did last year, but 1 week, give us an all-star break as well. But we're planning to do shows weekly for the rest of the season. So we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at those ballparks, even if they're tiny little ones in Korea.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.